Hey everyone, and welcome back to Scorncast, the official podcast of the Pop Scorn movie blog, which can be found at scornpop.blogspot.com. This is Jasper, my fingers smell like garlic, and joining me until he gets sick of me is Ghostface Milla, a writer at the Roundtable music blog. You can read him and download his weekly mixes at www.theroundtableonline.com. On this episode, we'll be reviewing this summer's third superhero movie, Green Lantern, starring Ryan Reynolds as a hotshot pilot who's involuntarily recruited into an intergalactic police force just in time to stop an evil cloud from devouring Earth. Wow, that synopsis didn't seem so ridiculous when I wrote it. Roll that clip.
Okay, all right. Place the ring and speak the oath. The oath. Because everybody knows the oath. I, Hal Jordan, do solemnly swear to pledge allegiance to a lantern that I got from a dying purple alien in a swamp, to infinity and beyond, by the power of Grayskull. What the hell? Come on, if you can find me 100 miles in the middle of nowhere, you'd think we'd go!
Brightest day, and blackest night. No evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power. Green Lantern's life.
So, Ghostface, I have three So Ghostface questions for you, okay?
Okay.
For
it.
That was one. Here's two. So, Ghostface, we're going to talk about another comic book movie, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, that wasn't a very good one. But speaking of not being very good, here's number three. So, Ghostface, let's say you're a very awesome jet pilot who runs into a mortally wounded but still considerably awesome purple alien who gives you an awesome magical ring that takes you to an awesome intergalactic hub where you find out you're now a totally awesome superhero. It wouldn't really faze you, right? Because it would be just another awesome brick in your awesome wall of awesome awesomeness?
Yeah, I think I would just, like, add it to the pile of awesomeness.
The awesome bank? You'd store it?
Right.
Yeah, I overuse the word awesome because we're talking about the Green Lantern, who is played by Ryan Reynolds, an actor who's sort of lately been branching out from being Van Wilder in every movie.
Yeah.
I'll throw up Adventureland and definitely Maybe and Buried as examples of that. But here it's mostly back to basics, and I would define basics, as far as Ryan Reynolds is concerned, to a performance style that's basically just him standing around and being like, hey dude, I'm awesome. Like, when I see Ryan Reynolds in this quintessential Ryan Reynolds mode, I always feel like every shot of him should be scored to Highway to the Danger Zone by Kenny Loggins, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it's because he plays a hotshot pilot, and that's a song from Top Gun?
Right.
Yeah,
I think it might be that, yeah. I mean, I think I totally understand what you're saying. Part of it is that he's very pretty and he's very charming, but I think to your point, too, like, there's not a lot of there. There was sort of some emotional ish scenes in this movie, or at least scenes that could have had, you know, some depth coming from Hal. And there was really, I didn't think he really brought a lot to it. You know, you could tell he was thinking about it, but not that he was actually, like, executing on the supposed, like, inner struggles of Hal Jordan, which, you know, I think were pretty thin to begin with, but I don't think he lived up to however thin they were, you know?
I guess my main point here is that Hal Jordan, who is the character that Ryan Reynolds plays, who becomes the Green Lantern, is so aware of his own awesomeness that when he's zipped up through outer space to this otherworldly realm and informed that he's now a peacekeeper of the galaxy, he takes it pretty well. He's sort of just like, well, that does sound awesome. And I feel like the awesome parts and the parts that you're talking about, which I agree with, there are like parts in here that are supposed to have an emotional depth to them. They exist in two different worlds of this movie.
Yeah, they don't really connect them in that way. And they vaguely address it. You know, they're like, oh my god, you've like gotten everything in your life and you're like so awesome. And he's kind of like, you know, yeah, but I've been so afraid. And it's like, have you really? Like, you have everything. And I don't know. I wasn't like totally in love with him as kind of like the superhero origin story. I wasn't really like feeling Hal Jordan.
Yeah, I want to get to that fear stuff in a minute. I wanna say first, just I'm not really gonna dick around on this Scorncast. I did not like this movie. But as much as I am predisposed to love superhero movies, I guess I can admit that this is not really my kind of superhero movie, because how I looked at this movie, it's a kid's movie. And I feel like if it came out when I was 11, I would watch this over and over at slumber parties. And this would be in the 80s when I was 11, not me being an 11-year-old right now in 2011, because I don't know if 11-year-old boys have slumber parties anymore. They're too busy sexting on their iPhones, right?
Yeah. I think they're, like, doing coke and, like, you know, sexting.
This is a kid's movie, right? Do you agree?
I totally agree, yeah. And actually, it was funny because there was a toddler in the theater when I saw it. And I was like, why is that toddler here? And then, like, the rest of the movie, and granted, it starts off with kind of like a spooky scene or like something that's a little like dark. And I'm talking about like the scene in, you know, the Lost Spectre or whatever, you know, where the, it's like the bad guy like breaks out of his, you know, his green casing. But I thought that the rest of the movie was pretty vanilla and pretty like family friendly. So yeah, it's definitely more kiddish, I think, than possibly even X-Men and Thor. Maybe not Thor so much. Thor was pretty clean cut, but I don't know. I don't really know of anything that happened in X-Men that wouldn't be clean cut, but I think just as far as like the subject matter and the pacing, it was like very slow and surface, so much so that like, you know, a child could get into it. And you know, and there were certain things I liked about it for that. You know, it had like an innocence to it. But yeah, totally a kid's movie.
Yeah, I bring this up because the concepts on display in this movie are so incredibly basic, and I don't mind it when thematic material in movies isn't complex or something to chew on for days and days. Like, they can't all be The Dark Knight. But there's so much discussion about fear in this movie, and about conquering your fear and facing your fear and not letting your fear control you. And with this level of repetition, I sometimes felt like I was watching a segment on Sesame Street. Like, I kept expecting Elmo to pop up and talk about how he has scary dreams sometimes, and Ryan Reynolds would be all like, you know, Elmo. Not that my slumber parties when I was a kid were a bunch of 11-year-olds sitting around watching Sesame Street, but still.
It was almost like they talked about fear so much that it started to become meaningless. You know, in all the different ways that they were talking about it, like, it was like, it wasn't like one thing. And even the way that he kind of like overcame his fear at the end, and thus like the fear of the bad guy and all that stuff, I felt like it was kind of anticlimactic in a way that was really easy to understand, like what happened. And then even thinking back to, like, as you said, like, the first time that he uses his powers, and I think they even make fun of him for this, like, one of the characters in the movie, is, like, you made a racetrack with, like, all this stuff, and, like, he turned a helicopter into a race car and, like, drove it around a racetrack, and, like, that's very, like, 11-year-old boy. You know, like, what would you think of? Like, I want it to be a really cool racetrack with a loop-de-loop and a ramp, you know, like, all this stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's totally kiddish, yeah.
Actually, I'm glad you brought that scene up, because that was next on my list of bullet points. I want to talk about how the Green Lantern uses his powers. Which is ridiculously. I guess in the wake of The Dark Knight, I've come to expect superhero movies to have kind of a gravity and a darkness and a weight to them. And I can't really criticize this movie's lack of that too much, because right up front you get this narration that delves into shit like the green force of willpower and the yellow essence of fear. But I thought a lot of what the Green Lantern used his powers to create were pretty hokey.
Yeah, it was. I mean, they were all just like very straightforward inventions of like things that already existed. You know, he wasn't pushing it forward, and you know, and it's not to say that the other guys used their powers in more imaginative ways, and even called him out for how primitive his imagination is, or how limited it is. But even still, after he kind of harnessed the power and realized everything about it, he still used them in ways that were just like, I don't know, it was almost like, why bother, like, you know, he saved the day or whatever, but like, why make a giant gun out of this green energy? Why not make something that's incredibly different and unique that's never been made, or, you know, whatever, anything your heart can imagine, and, like, you know, kill him that way? It just seems, you know, just so that the audience could understand it, you know. And I keep thinking of Ben 10. It's this cartoon on, like, Cartoon Network, and this kid has, like, an alien thing. He can turn into all these stupid aliens, whatever, but, like, he has a cousin or some friend of the family, and she kind of has an energy that's just like the Green Lanterns, except it's like pink or something, but it's very similar. She's an alien race or something, and she uses it in these really, really imaginative ways where she'll make like plates of glass in front of people, like when they're shooting things or something, and then sometimes she'll like make an arrow and shoot the arrow, and like as the arrow gets close to somebody, it turns into something else, and like, you know, it's just all these things that you're like, whoa, like the world is her oyster and she can make anything. And I felt like Hal Jordan just made, you know, a gun or two aircraft, or, you know, he made things that were already kind of in existence, and he used them in very, like, straightforward ways. So I was kind of underwhelmed.
Yeah, he makes these guns to fight a giant cloud, which we'll get to in a minute, but he makes these guns to fight a giant cloud, and I'm thinking, why don't you just make a giant fan?
Right, exactly. Make a vacuum.
But a Dyson, of course. But what exactly... Okay, there's a scene where people... Some of the characters in the movie are at a big party, and that's where he does, like you said, he does make his first appearance there. And this is where he has to save a helicopter from crashing, and he does so by turning this helicopter into, like, a child's race car toy, and then he drives it up a child's race car track that you would have, like, for your Matchbox cars or whatever. But yet at the same time, he saves people by just transforming the space around them into, like, green energy fields to protect them. Like, what is going on in this guy's head, exactly, is my question.
I mean, apparently not much. Like, I mean, he saw a racetrack thing, like, earlier that day, right? Or the day before.
Yeah, he went to his nephew's birthday party, right? And the scene, there's a scene where he's in his nephew's bedroom, and he gives him this stupid-ass glass jet or whatever that was his father's. And I was, the whole time I'm thinking, man, if I was the Green Lantern's nephew, I would be like, this is not an acceptable gift for my birthday. But,
seriously?
Yeah, just horrible.
The hand-me-down?
Right, yeah, thanks a lot, Uncle Hal. But he does, upon leaving the room, bump into this kid's Matchbox car set or something, and it causes one of the little toy cars to, like, run down a ramp. So I guess if you wanted to be comic book guy from The Simpsons, you could argue that this is something that he created because it was on his mind. But, I mean, like, why... My question to that would be, why in the middle of this life-or-death situation where this senator is about to perish in a helicopter crash is he thinking of his nephew's toy car collection?
Yeah, it really doesn't make any sense.
No.
Yeah, I don't understand why he couldn't have just, like, isolated the blades on the helicopter, you know, in a way that, like, slowed them down and been like, oh, wait, let me lower this to the ground slowly.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah, and that's kind of where I was like, oh, you know, there's so many different ways you can excuse them. Like, well, it is the first time he used it. He really doesn't know what he's doing, blah, blah, blah. But I think it was more just so they could have, like, this kind of sweet scene with all this green racetrack, you know, car running around kind of thing. I was just kind of like, yawn. But
yeah. And I think my favorite part about that scene is getting back to the, I guess, intelligence level of the movie. It ends with the Green Lantern, of course, saves everyone and then flies away. And really briefly, at the end of that sequence, you see a television reporter doing a broadcast, and you catch the very end of her broadcast, and her broadcast ends with her saying something like, the question on everyone's mind is, who is this amazing hero? No. The question on everybody's mind would be, oh my god, what the fuck was that?
Yeah, exactly. Like, why was this green shit everywhere?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Some dude drops out of the sky, and he looks like he's on his way to an S&M mixer in the Emerald City, and we're asking, like, who is this masked man? Who is this amazing hero? What? No.
Yeah, I don't understand why no one really brought up the suit, and if we could just spend a minute talking about this, because I think it was a point of contention while the film was being made, which is the fact that his suit is completely CG, so that it looks like it's kind of living, breathing, and this energy is flowing through it. I do not care for this suit and the way that it is art directed and executed and all that stuff, but I will say I found it less distracting as the movie went on. I was expecting it to be more distracting, and it still sometimes pulled me out of it. Like, there was times when just looking at his collar and the way that he turned his head and stuff, I was just like, whoa, what, like, this is weird looking. But I didn't really like his suit, which, let me just put a caveat there, like, I liked the suit whenever Ryan Reynolds was shown to the side.
Oh boy.
Profile.
Here we go.
Yeah.
I expect no less from you, Ghostface. I have a lot to say about the suit. I'm going to save those comments for a while. And I just want to say that this movie reminds me a lot of the set pieces from the Christopher Reeve Superman movie, sort of married to the story and overall clunkiness of the second Fantastic Four movie, which is another superhero flick where civilization is threatened by an ominous giant cloud. Though, I will give the cloud in this movie credit, because it actually is pretty terrifying.
Yeah, I liked the way it moved, and I liked the way it looked when it was descending upon the city and stuff. And it did go fast, and, you know, totally, like, we saw people die and stuff, which I felt like they weren't going to do. But I do think, in the end, it was a giant octopus with a face. Like, I think it looked kind of stupid towards the end. In space and stuff, it looked kind
of
dumb.
It reminded me of Audrey 2 from Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
Because it had tentacles with little tiny evil faces on them.
Right, yeah, it's true. Yeah, it was really just saying, feed me, hell, feed.
So, can we talk about the backstory of this cloud? Because I have some issues here, too. Did we bring up at all that this mystical realm that he's taken to out in the galaxy is called Oa? And there's all these, you know, different alien species that are basically the guardians of all these different sectors across the galaxy. And there's this one guy there named Sinestro, who, again, not to repeat myself too much, but we'll get to him in a minute also. And there's a sequence where Sinestro goes before the guardians of Oa, who are sort of like the really hyper-intelligent beings that rule and govern all the protectors of the galaxy. And he goes before them, and they're telling him about this evil cloud, which is called Parallax. And there is a flashback sequence where you find out that Parallax is actually one of these guardians who was consumed by the yellow energy of fear, or the yellow essence of fear, or whatever. And my question at that point in the movie was, you see this wide shot of all the guardians sitting, and they're all sitting in these giant columns that where they're lifted up in the air, and they can look down on you and like rule over you and whatnot. And I don't remember how many of them there are, but there's enough of them, and then right in the middle, where one of these columns is, the column is just broken off, and there's no guardian sitting on top of it, because that's the guardian who became Parallax. This is the nerdiest digression ever, but go with it. And my question basically is, like, when they're telling Sinestro about, oh, that this Parallax thing used to be one of these guardians, why wasn't Sinestro like, oh yeah, I was wondering what that empty pillar was?
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't, like, address it more. I mean, they did, but, like, no one... I mean, I noticed the empty one in the beginning, and I was just like, that's weird. But, yeah, it wasn't like, oh, yeah, what happened to that guy? I guess they're so immortal, it happened so long ago, but you would have thought that at one point somebody would have asked that question.
Yeah, like, Sinestro seemed pretty surprised by the revelation that there used to be another blue floaty dude in a long red robe sitting on top of that thing.
Right.
When it was, like, smack in the middle and everything.
And I liked the Mars Attacks aliens in this movie. I thought they were really good and very articulate.
Yes, they were more articulate than the Mars Attacks aliens in Mars Attacks.
Right, exactly. But I liked their big globy heads, and I thought that they all had, like, little snarls kind of on them. I thought that was really funny. And their robes were, like, probably 70 feet long, which I think is kind of a waste of fabric. Who am I?
Yeah, it seems like it would be really difficult to clean.
Yeah. I mean, to go to the bathroom, to do anything.
Oh, my God. I didn't even think about going to the bathroom. They're accidentally flushing them all the time, probably. Hey, speaking of accidentally flushing, let's talk about Blake Lively.
Oh, God.
I don't even know what I meant by that.
No, I know. I'm not sure, but I'm going to go with it. We kept referring to her as the Christmas Jones of this movie. because believing that she's an adult is one thing. And that I'm not there yet as an audience goer. But believing that she's a pilot and a businesswoman was really, really challenging.
At this point, I feel like these superhero movies have to have romances in them, because these movies just absolutely have to have a romance in them. There's really no particular reason why this is in there. It's pretty dreadful.
It just feels so forced every time. It's like, oh, well, you're the only woman we've met, so clearly, you know?
Yeah, you're on Gossip Girl, so get with the hunky guy. There's a scene where he reveals himself to her. He reveals that he's the guy that she's known all along. And it's really stupid. I feel like it's missing half of itself, because her mood completely flips on a nickel. It's not even a dime. And he uses his ring to make her this pretty green necklace because he says he forgot her most recent birthday, and she's all ooh and ah about it, and I was like, you know that necklace is made of energy and it's disappearing as soon as he flies off, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, nothing about this romance really worked for me. It was just eating up screen time, really.
I mean, I didn't care for her, and I thought that their whole thing was really stupid, their whole backstory about how they've known each other since they were kids and blah, blah, blah. It didn't make me think that they were any closer than they actually were, and it still didn't make me think that she was, like, 10 years younger than him. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You can make her hair darker and put her in, like, businesswoman clothes, but, like, she still looks like a teenager or someone in her early 20s.
Yeah, it's actually good, though, that she was cast, because for a while it was going to be Selena Gomez. No, I'm just kidding. Because that would be...
okay.
She looks 13, and it creeps me out to see guys on message boards who are talking about how hot she is. I don't care if she's legal. She looks like she is in junior high school, so...
Yeah, it's true.
Creepers.
It's true.
Yeah, but actually, speaking of their relationship, this movie is full of really weirdly defined relationships, because it's not even until about maybe 45 minutes into the movie when you find out that Hal Jordan knows Hector Hammond, who is one of the villains of this movie, right? Like, it just kind
yeah.
of, it comes up in the weirdest way. Like, you don't even know that they are acquaintances until you're told this, like, well into the movie. Which is weird because a lot of the drama between them kind of hinges on them being old friends.
Right. And I was so surprised at that because I was like, oh, that's weird. I guess that's going to come up later. Or, like, we'll get more of that. And then, of course, you know, knowing that all of their fathers knew each other and stuff is added onto it, too. But, like, spoiler alert, there's kind of, like, of no consequence because, like, everybody dies without there being, like, anything, or at least they're presumed dead, I should say, without there being any real, like, culmination of that past. Like, it seemed like they knew each other for no reason.
Yeah, and speaking of Peter Sarsgaard, I'm actually going to flip it a little bit. Peter Sarsgaard plays Hector Hammond. I want to just run down a couple things that I did like about this movie, and one of them is Peter Sarsgaard.
Really?
Yeah, I feel like he might be the only actor here who understands the level of the material. he just seems to be really in tune with it. It's not too far removed from the kind of villain you'd see on the 1960s Batman show, but it worked for me.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it worked, but I still kind of think he was miscast, or at least not miscast, but like underused.
Oh, underused for sure. I mean, there's this evil cloud floating through space, gonna make it to Earth in time for the big climax, but for the longest time, it's setting him up to be, you know, the big villain, and he's dispatched relatively quickly without much fanfare, so...
Yeah, I did enjoy his scream, and I'm glad that we got so much of it, because the first time I heard it, it was hilarious. The second time I heard it, it was kind of creepy and scary, and then the third time, which I think... was when he perishes, I was like, damn, like, this is pretty good. Like, it was totally entertaining, and I was, like, sad to see him go, you know, because it was such a good screen.
Yeah, and I always like seeing these actors who are, you know, really respected and people who are sort of, like, noteworthy for being at the top of their craft. I mean, he's an actor that pops up in supporting roles, usually, in really interesting movies like Kinsey and Shattered Glass. And I really like the idea of taking those kinds of actors and putting them in these extremely over-the-top comic book movies. I think that sometimes it works really well, and I did like what he did in this movie. Also, I'm gonna redirect to what you were talking about earlier with the special effects. Ever since these early trailers came out, there's been a decent amount of bad buzz centered around how overly CGI'd this movie looks, particularly, like you were saying, his suit, which, I actually liked it. And it is weird, I guess, for a while, but once you kind of get used to looking at it, if he were wearing a Green Lantern costume that was made out of foam rubber, I feel like it would have looked 10 times worse. Like, the sequences set on Oa are so overly CGI'd that having him in a CGI suit helps him to more or less be a part of this world as seamlessly as possible, right?
Yes, actually, yeah, I think that's a really good point you make.
Because nothing else in those scenes is real except for his head and the head of Mark Strong, who plays Sinestro. Like, they're both wearing CGI suits, and everything else in this world is CGI'd. So I like that better than them doing a real suit made out of foam rubber and green screening it in there. It would not have looked as good as it looked there, I don't think.
Yeah, I think that's totally true. But I think there's certain parts where he's just, like, standing in his apartment, you know, or whatever, when he's, like, turning
yeah.
the suit on for his friend. and parts where he's just, like, standing next to Blake Lively. And it might just be because, like, that environment is so hum, Blake Lively, but it might also just be that, like, the suit is a little over the top, or, like, it's just not blended that well with the background or something like that. But that might have been on purpose. It just was a bit distracting.
I would say that the scenes that take place on Oa aren't as realistic or tangible as the fantasy world in, say, Avatar. They have this kind of lightweight quality that lacks any real gravity, but I kind of like that about it. I liked this world. I thought it was super colorful, and it's populated by all these aliens, half of whom don't even appear to be in that lazy humanoid form that most movie aliens are. You know, the camera pans by these creatures in their Green Lantern outfits, and some of them have really intriguing designs. And I don't know enough about the comics to know if these are comic characters or just background filler for the movie. But in a lot of cases, I was wondering, like, hey, I wonder what that thing's story is, and I wonder if it's more interesting than the one we're being told.
Right, yeah, I think, and that was fun, too, just to see all of them, and to see them, like, raise their, you know, their rings and stuff. It almost makes you kind of, like, hope that they do continue to explore this story in, like, a positive direction that has, like, more... You know, that just has more legs, but like, pun intended, that just they could do more with different types of characters. I think we still saw, you know, the closest ones, I can't remember his name, but the one who trained him in combat and the one voiced by Jeffrey Rush, the fish, kind of, they were all very humanoid, and especially Sinestro. You know, Sinestro was basically human looking, except for like his ears and his pink pigment. But I think, you know, that... the rest of them looked really cool. And you know, some of their CG was, like, a little glossy or whatever, but I think it was still, like, you know, imaginative. It was cool to see.
Yeah, and actually, speaking of exploring this world more, I'm glad you brought that up, because this is actually part of the last thing I have to ask you. I have a question for you that's sort of becoming the obligatory one final thing question I've been asking you in regards to a lot of these summer movies. Did you stay for the closing credits?
I didn't. Was there anything?
Yes.
I thought there would be, but we didn't stay. Okay. What was it? Was it anything good?
Well, Ghostface, you only missed the most well-known and significant development in the entire Green Lantern story.
Are you serious?
Yeah, and it's shoehorned into the closing credits.
Oh, man.
So, I mean, like, I don't know how up you are on your Green Lantern lore, but basically, Sinestro...
I think I know what it is. Go ahead.
So he becomes evil. He takes the yellow ring of fear. It's not well set up at all during the movie. And watching Mark Strong play Sinestro, you kind of know that it's coming, because why would they bother casting Mark Strong, who is, you know, a villain in Sherlock Holmes and Kick-Ass and a bunch of other stuff? He's pretty, you know, he plays heavy dudes all the time. It's just kind of, like, odd and sort of depressing that they would just kind of shoehorn that into the closing credits when, you know, it's a pretty significant development that should probably come, like, an hour into the actual Green Lantern origin story, if they're going to make that into a movie. And it's also just kind of depressing because I don't feel like this movie is ever going to see a sequel. So for them to set a sequel up during the middle of the credits with this kind of big development is sort of, like, stupid.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, in a weird way, I think they put a lot of their effort and energy into things that would only have a payout if this was a trilogy, which I know is how they planned it. But I think that's a good way to think, but I think, you know, when you look at a movie like The Matrix, you know, it could have ended and been fine. They ended up, in my opinion, kind of ruining it with 2 and 3, but, like, the first one can stand on its own. So if 2 and 3 never got made, people would have been very happy with the first one. Whereas in this case, it's almost like they need a second one to kind of redeem itself. In a way, not redeem itself, but really pick up the pace in the way that Spider-Man 2 did. You know, get right into the story, get right into the origin of this other, you know, villain or whatever. Because I feel like in Green Lantern, they spent a lot of time on the origin of the Peter Sarsgaard character, right? And kind of like his backstory, his struggle with his father. Then they had to deal with Hal and Hal's issues with his dad and how his dad died. Then they had to deal with, like, the planet, you know, and all the Guardians and all the Lanterns, and then, like, that one immortal Guardian's past, and, like, all, you know, there was a lot of beginning and background of stories that when they finally got into it and they actually, like, fought and stuff, it was all over very quickly, and it was almost like they just had to keep continuing the twist of who you've already met and known about, you know, and it, but it just ended, you know, the movie was over, like the plot was kind of run its course. So I think it would be better in a second one to see it. But yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. When Mark Strong, when Sinestro got the ring, we were all kind of like, oh, right, you know, and he had that demeanor the whole time that he was kind of, you know, angry and could be evil or just, you know, power hungry. But then it just kind of ended, and we were kind of like, oh, it would have been nice to see that. But granted, we left before the credits ended. So.
Yeah, you could have seen it, all right. So what grade would you assign the Green Lantern?
I'd probably give it like a B-. I thought it was entertaining, but, you know, definitely kid-friendly, maybe a little too much.
I think this might be our first big split. I would go C- on this, actually.
No, I could totally understand.
Maybe after having this conversation with you, I feel almost a little bit too mean to give this a C-. I feel like it's probably, I've talked into my head that maybe it's like a C, but yeah, it's just sort of flat and useless, and it didn't really do much of anything for me at all.
Yeah, I think in my mind, I'm comparing it to Thor and X-Men, because those are the most recent superhero movies of the season, and I think it's worse than Thor, but kind of better than X-Men, in a way. So, but X-Men had a lot to live up to, so.
Yeah, I agree. I would say that in terms of what we've seen so far this summer, I definitely like Thor a lot better. I think it's empirically probably worse than X-Men, but I was more disappointed with X-Men than I was with this movie.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Like, personally, you know, my personal grade, obviously, for this is better than for X-Men, because I expected more. It's funny that we both liked Thor the most, because I think we were both kind of, like, so-so about Thor, you know, from even the beginning.
Yeah, I have more, like, childhood reading experience and, like, action figure playing experience with the Green Lantern and X-Men more so than I ever did with Thor. But, I mean, maybe that says a lot right there, that the movie that we know the least about, we had the most fun watching because we knew the least about it going in.
Right. It might be the state of superhero movies in general, I think, you know?
Yeah. I'm going to go right now and pick up some 11-year-olds and find out what they think of this. I'm just kidding, Chris Hansen. And that's going to do it for another episode of Scorncast. Thanks to Ghostface Milla for stopping by, thanks to Bug for our theme music, and just a reminder, you can visit PopScorn at scornpop.blogspot.com, and you can email popscorn@scornpop@gmail.com. By the way, those Guardians? Not very bright. They hire a shifty-looking guy named Sinestro, who looks like Satan had a baby with Snidely Whiplash as their chief of police. Okay.